It's like we know what we're doing.
Yeah. Dangerous things there, but good evening, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome to Atlantic Bushcraft Adventures. We are coming to you a tiny bit late. That's due to me tonight. had some other things going on, ran a little late, and I do apologize to you folks. But tonight we're on episode 222, and this is kind of one of those, I don't want to say weird episodes, but kind of getting back to basics where we started, Ben and I. We wanted to talk a little about honing your knife skills. So the best way to sum up what we're going to chat about tonight is kind of a beginner to intermediate's guide to basically developing your relationship with your knife. And that's going to be, we're going to talk a little bit about, you know, some design factors that go in there, some exercises that can go in there. This episode's going to be for somebody that's into bushcrafting, they realize they like it, and they're trying to come to that next level where they're, you know, maybe looking at getting a personal knife or changing out the knife they have or trying to learn a little bit about a knife that might work a little better for them. Does that make any kind of sense, Ben? Did I explain that in a way that is understandable?
Yeah, I think so. I think that's quite good. Sorry, I had to switch my camera. I wasn't happy with the other version. So I think this is better. Other people disagree. Yeah, so like you said, we're going to get into how to hone your knife skills, how to sort of like perfect it. And you said an interesting term, your upgrading your personal knife.
Yeah. And that's kind of where I was. And the whole idea behind this, Ben, for what it's worth, is we are on episode 222. I know we've covered a ton of topics, and I was literally laying in bed this morning thinking, you know, it's been a while since we've actually gone back to the basics of bushcrafting. We've been kind of all over the board. Not that it's a bad thing. We've branched out to some things. We've tried including some outreaching programs and drag it into bushcraft and expand our audience. But it's been a while since we went back to the roots of bushcraft. And what is the roots of bushcraft? It's, well, getting out in the woods and enjoying it. But what's the number one thing that all bushcrafters talk about or will argue about or there's heated discussions about? It's knives. You know what I mean?
Yeah. So, I mean, the one exception I found in sort of the bushcraft world, if you want to like break them down, is your ultralight crowd. There's some of those don't carry a knife at all. Some of them barely cover anything that would be considered a blade, because they're in. But outside of that, knives are basically a sub-religion of the bushcraft world. And it's, you know, I've seen people spend hundreds, if not thousands of dollars on knives. Which, you know, to me is a little baffling. I'm rather cheap with my knives. And I have a very personal relationship with my knife. That sounds funny to some people, but my knives tend to go everywhere I go. Like days that I've been told I can't carry a knife are very difficult days for me. I struggle on those days. and I find myself reaching for my pocket and looking for my knife. So if I have to fly, I hate the fact that my knife is usually locked in some kind of check baggage, or I'm going to go a week without it. It's not a good feeling for me because it's always there.
And that's the thing. At a certain point in your, I'm going to say bushcrafting career or outdoors career, not even specifically bushcrafting, woodsman career, whatever you want to call it. But at a certain point, you realize that a knife no longer becomes a tool that you only take out on your adventures. It becomes a part of your everyday life. And just like Ben said, most of us out there, we all have some sort of pocket knife. You know what I mean? Like, that's mine. That's my everyday carry. That's the one I just happen to like. And there's reasons I take this one as my everyday carry. It's not my favorite knife. It's my favorite everyday carry knife.
So I've carried this Open L since I've got it. It's rarely left my pocket. It's actually...
just another one for the display here.
Oh, man, I have a box full of them right there. It's surprisingly comfortable to carry, and I like the sharpness. I like the size.
I brought a few demonstrations. And that's just what was in this room.
And another feeling. Within a few feet, I can probably match you. I'm not going to, but I could. I have this here little Swiss Army knife. So, yeah, like I said, I'm really not comfortable without my knife. It comes out more often than not. Cut a thread, fix a fingernail if I have some issue there, open a package. It seems like not a day goes by I don't find some need or use for it.
And that's the thing. Like you said, it's once you get accustomed to it, you do feel kind of naked without it. I carry a knife every day. My line of work restricts what kind of knife I can carry with me, but I still have one that I use in my job. And I mean, I can't function without it. I didn't have it on my belt today, and it almost drove me insane how many times I reached for it and it wasn't there. So it was just one of those things. I took the motorcycle, so I took it off and I jammed it in my pocket of my coat, and I took the coat off and left it at the door, and I went down to my office. I was like, I'm not walking all the way back there. Yeah, I should have walked all the way back. But anyway, long story short, once you get used to a knife, you want the knife. And the thing that makes you want the knife is having a knife that works for you. It's no good to have a knife in your pocket, for instance, like this one, which was actually a gift from one of our listeners here tonight, Steve McDonald. Thank you very much. Not that this is a bad knife. It's just this is probably not one I'm going to carry with me every day everywhere I go. I do know people that would, just because of their lifestyle. They're not in and around sensitive things like other people's jobs may dictate, where if you walked in with this, you're probably going to be escorted out by somebody else. You know what I mean? Much like if you worked in an airport or if you worked at a government office or something like that. You know what I mean? There's just not all the times you can wear a knife like that. So that's where you fall into a knife that suits your needs, for how your lifestyle is. But there's a whole bunch of things that you can look at that are kind of common throughout all knives. And yes, I'm even going to go as far as to fixed blades and folding knives alike have a lot of similarities that you can look for, which is going to make you a decent knife. So I think that's where we should start, is what should you look for in a knife, or what are the aspects of a knife you can look at that will dictate your decision or assist your decision on the knife you're going to select. And I mean, just to get the ball rolling, Ben, because I kind of see you're thinking, well, what do you mean there, Rob?
Well, I mean, have that.
What?
Oh, I have thoughts. Go ahead.
But I mean, the thoughts I'm looking for is one, like you said, blade design and thickness, which we'll come back to, handle design, stuff like that. What's the things you can look at? So I guess let's start right at one end of the knife and work to the other end, all the things that we look at. So something that might be important to you that might not be important to somebody else is the pommel or the back of the knife. Like, some people do have a preference onto literally what the very back of the knife looks like and functions as. So,
yeah.
What do I mean by that? What does that mean to you, Ben? Because I know that's probably a feature you look at.
Pommel, maybe, maybe not. I mean, I look for something that's going to make sure it doesn't slip out of my hand. So something with a bit of a bulbous end that can kind of fit out through your hand. It does allow you, like, if it's properly built, you can actually use it a bit like a hammer. So if you need to tap something, you need to, you know, it has an operational function to it. I don't tend to beat my knives around. I find that would be a recipe for disaster for me. But yeah, no, I mean, for sure. If you looked at the old, Sylvester Stallone Rambo knives.
Yes, I think everybody at some point in their outdoors lifetime has stumbled upon the old Rambo knife with the screw-off compass cap that has the handful of survival items in it.
Yeah. So in that one, the screw-off usually had a compass in it, but yeah, so I mean, there's a few to back-end designs, and I mean, if you have a full tang, you're going to see the back end of that knife through there. And I think on that one there, you can see where it's peened over.
Yep. That's what I was showing off on that one.
Yeah. So, you know, that you're missing the camera completely with that.
Nah.
Over.
Nope. Wrong camera for you, Ben. It's not what the other people are seeing. I have two cameras up here. You're on one. They're on the other.
Ah, okay. I did not realize we had different cameras.
Yes, you're actually over here on my right. This is the audience.
But
the camera's still up here. Anyway. I'll take a picture and send you. It's easier to show than explain.
Okay. So, anyways, the back of the knife, I can see that as being a fairly important aspect to it for sure.
Well, the thing go ahead.
No, I was going to say, I think the whole handle is probably more important than most people could give it credit for.
Yes. And the only reason that I was talking about the back of it is there is a couple knives out there that... they're sending you that picture. There is a couple knives out there that do have kind of a hammer hilt on them, or a hammer pommel. The Les Schrad survival knife is one that comes to mind. And it was made as something that you could use to potentially hammer in tent pegs. You know what I mean? So if that is something you're looking for in a knife, that may bear on your decision a little bit. Once again, probably not the most important factor, but it is something you could potentially consider. The other option that I was thinking of was it actually had something that couldn't slip out of your hand. That's more what I look for. But yeah, they you can use them as a hammer in certain instances. There are knives like that. I think Bear Grylls did one too. I don't think either one ended up being very successful at being used as a hammer. But I mean, it was a hardened end. You know what I mean?
Well, I mean, some people look at a knife as a defensive thing. So having that solid end that you can bash into things, you can break windows in a car. You can, there's a lot of functions to that. So some of them actually had a point, and they were designed for that very purpose. If you ever had to smash the side window to get out of a car, you can use it for that. You know, it's a solid thing. It's something you grip well, mm-hmm. and you can actually, like, functionally use it for a purpose. So, yeah, I mean, your overall design of a knife is extremely important. But if you want to continue on.
Yeah, I was going to say, the pommel, just one of those things you may want to keep an eye on. It might have some bearing. It might not. Coming up to that, though, something that is important to me is the handle, not the shape as well as the design. And this is where a lot of people lose a little traction on this. They find something that may sit in their hand well, but then it can create hot spots later on. And I have a prime example of a knife like this, and this is why I was thinking about this. But you go ahead, Ben. Let's talk about your thoughts on this, and then I have a demo that I want to show people.
Well, I was going to say, a knife has to be comfortable in a hand and allow you to maneuver it in a way you want. So I don't like overly big handles. If they're too big, they're too clunky. I find them difficult to use, difficult to do detail work. If they're too small, then they kind of get lost in my hand and they can become extremely uncomfortable. If they had odd shapes, like some of them you see, it's like someone took a grinder to them, cut all little slits and stuff to make them look super rugged. That might be uncomfortable. You see skeletonized knives. They look pretty cool, but functionally might start acting up after a period.
So that's that demo knife I was talking about. And there's like this indentation or jibbing all through this handle. And this is a Schrade knife. This is a decent brand name, fairly expensive knife. The knife itself, I love the design. I love the shape. I love the drop point to hold in your hand. Feels really good. But if you work this for any amount of time, like, you know, say 10 plus minutes, you get hot spots all through your hand because of this very heavy indentation on the handle. And I've always meant to get somebody to make me a set of handles for this, or take a crack at making my own handles for this, because the knife itself is amazing, except for that one feature. And that one feature actually makes me shelf this knife more often than take it with me.
Man, if I was home, I'd do it for you in a minute. But yeah, so I mean, agreed. I mean, have you ever considered just wrapping it in paracord?
I've tried a couple things, but then now the handle gets too thick. And we talked about that. Sometimes if it sits too thick in your hand, then you can't maneuver it. A comfortable grip on a knife, and this is just a general starting point for people, is you should be able to encompass the entire knife, but not so much so that, you know, you have a tight fist, but it should be like, I don't know, your finger should lay over it and just barely touch your palm, or just not quite touch your palm, or just overlap your palm. But it shouldn't be a massive amount either way, if that makes any kind of sense. And hopefully our video viewers get a better indication of what I just tried to explain. Once again, if you're listening to this on the podcast, I apologize. This is probably one of those episodes that's worth jumping over to the YouTube side. Type in Atlantic Bushcraft Adventures and look up episode 222.
Yeah. So, yeah, it needs to be comfortable. It shouldn't cause undue stress and stuff. Like this little open L, it's got like a rise in the center. It tapers off. It's got the kick out in the back, so you can really, it won't slip. It is a little bit small, which is great for putting in your pocket. you were able to get a really detailed, delicate grip, as well as a strong enough grip to do some deeper cutting. It's comfortable. The round collar that kind of locks on it really lets me put some thumb pressure at the top of the handle and just below the blade, so I can get some really detailed cuts with that. It kind of creates a natural rotation point that I'm allowed to really do what I want, which surprised me, because otherwise I would have thought from a visual look that this knife would not give me that, but it fits my hand really well, and it really gives me that. You can kind of see where the thumb pushes. I can get a lot of pressure with my thumb, and that's where a lot of your power comes from. So that grip, once you get that grip and it's comfortable, you can get like really detailed. You can do some awesome work, knife work with this. Bigger knives, I often, like when I made knives, and I did for a while, personal knives, things I'd share with friends and family, I actually would grind out a thumb place for my thumb to go in, because I really like that control. I think you'll have to do there with that.
I think one of my knives here actually does have a spot like that. I'm just not sure which one.
A lot of them will have jibbing too, just little cross marks.
I was gonna say, I got a lot of them with jibbing. Maybe I don't have one. I used to have one that actually had a hollow out, much like you're saying. But jibbing, for those that are wondering, is basically what you're seeing on this one. Like Ben said, it's just cross marks that go across. It's just gripping for your thumb. And on this whole thought about handles, before you start sinking a ton of money into buying knives, it's worth buying a few cheaper ones. Jibbing. So it's worth buying a few cheaper ones with different handle designs until you find something that you like in your hand. And I mean, a lot of my knives aren't expensive per se, but they function really well. And I never actually sunk a whole lot of money into a knife. I wasn't based on brand name nor price point. I looked for something that sat in my hand well, and the blade was a shape that I liked to function with. So seeing we're moving on to that, let's talk a little bit about blades there, Ben. And you're probably a little more knowledgeable on this than I would be, so I will fill in where I can. But being somebody that has made knives, you know a little bit more about what to look for in a knife. So, I mean, real briefly for me, it's just basic shape and thickness. But there's more to it than that.
Yeah, I mean, there definitely is. I mean, this is a good little knife. This is a good little knife. I don't necessarily go for big blades. I know a lot of guys are. If you go into some of these bushcrafting guys, they're carrying around a Crocodile Dundee knives, right? That's not a knife. This is a knife. And they're like 11, 12-inch blades. You know, they're nylon machetes. And I don't have a problem with machetes in the right place. I think I would gladly use a machete. It's not a bad knife.
Like that's probably one of my larger knives. Not that I dislike this knife. This knife is actually really nice, and I use it for a lot of things. But it's not my daily driver in the woods.
Yeah. But pay attention to where you're actually cutting. So if you're doing detail work, I guarantee you most times you're not using even the forward two-thirds of the knife. You're cutting right there as close to your hand as you can, and you can get some really detailed work. You see where my hand naturally goes? I'm naturally trying to carve with that. When I do a longer cut, I'll start to use the long blade. That's where it comes in handy. Too long of a blade, you lose the leverage, and the knife actually will overpower your wrist. And so you don't get to use the tip. I've seen guys who can do it. So no one say Ben went out and told me, oh, it's impossible to do that. But it's not the truth. The fact is, I just find it more difficult. It's not as comfortable, so I don't choose big knives generally. I don't see a need for it personally. I like something I fit in my pocket. I like something that I can carry a few of. If I broke my knife, I would be highly disappointed, and I can't afford to carry two or three big knives. I can carry a lot of little knives, and I do. I generally have at least two on me at any given time. There's almost always a few in my vehicles. There's usually a few extra ones in my pack. I carry a small sharpening stone at the very minimum.
I just noticed that one knife has the point on it that we were talking about earlier.
Yeah. You can really, you can do a lot of damage with that.
It's a window breaker on this one, I think.
You can crack a skull with that. If you're fishing, you can kill a fish.
To be fair, this is my fire department one. Window breaker, seatbelt cutter.
hey, man. You're in the woods. Something's coming at you that's, you know, like a large coyote, and you got to smack it across the top of the skull. You're going to use what you got, right? I'm not going to lie to you, right?
Oh, no, that's true. But yeah, and what Ben was talking about there, so let's talk about an actual skill you can practice while trying to figure out what knife it is you're looking for to carry or what you like in a knife. And exactly what Ben said, try doing some fine detail work. Get in close, get your thumb on the back of your knife, roll your knife a little into some cuts. Never cut towards yourself. You've always heard this one, and a smart one that, or an easy limerick is, cut towards your chum, not your thumb, because it's better to lose a friend than self-inflicted pain. Which sounds hilarious, but, you know, it sticks in your mind, makes you laugh, and it reminds you, cut away. So the other thing to try is when you are testing knives and finding something that you like. It looks like a Grohmann knife.
This is a Winchester.
Is it a Winchester? This is a Winchester. A great big Rambo knife I had.
I got this at Walmart, I think. And I've never used it a lot. I like the look of it. I like the feel of it.
It would be a good skinning knife. And this is the thing to look for in your blade design. Depending on the curvature of your blade, mostly curved blades or more curved blades, or these quick drop point knives, these are meant more for skinning. They're meant for getting your finger on the back of it and doing like surgical work when you're skinning something, cleaning something. You can also use them for wood. This is my wife's knife, and you can tell the blade is fairly short. It's only about 3 inches on this knife. This is her everyday driver when she's out in the woods. This is what she likes. She likes a shorter blade. She likes being able to do finer work, has a nice catch for her thumb, has jibbing on the back. It's everything she wants. And honestly, I've used this to skin out deer and field dress rabbits and things like that. Amazing for fine detail work. So yeah, that's something to try with a knife, is do some fine detail work with it. Try carving some fine things. See how that knife flows, how you like to move it around. Is it causing hot spots in your hand? All things to watch for, because you might have the best knife that somebody told you about, but it may not work worth a crap for you.
Yeah.
I hope I bought you enough time for whatever you're digging for there, Ben.
Oh, I got a few examples. Okay. Here's an example I actually made. It needs some cleaning. It's not as sharp as it used to be. It's fairly heavy. It was made from a file. It's extremely hard. But I have a nice plot for my thumb. The handle's comfortable. Honestly, the length is too much. I can't do much with this tip. So again, I'm only using this much. If I could cut this in half, I would argue I'd still have a better knife than I would have with this, right? But I got a few examples. And honestly, we said something at the beginning. You don't have to spend a ton. Here's another one. I did not make this knife, but I made the handle for it. I made the sheath for it. It's a little toy. I had it as a kid, and I love this knife, actually. But it's just a simple little knife.
And the simpler the knife, the more often the better it is. In my, like, not everybody's opinion, but I like a simple knife as well.
Yeah. Yeah. You can, you don't, like you said, you don't have to spend a lot of money. We've talked here before, Mora knives. I have one there. It's not the one I use the most. It's actually probably my least favorite Mora knife, but it's still a good knife. This one here. So this is a 746. It's got a rubberized non-slip handle. It's kind of bulky, but it fits really comfortably. You really can get a strong grip on it. Your thumb has a natural place to land. The blade, as you can see, is not all that long. Like, you can easily get good pressure at every point on this. Super sharp. They, 20-30 bucks, I think, on Amazon. It doesn't pay a lot. The sheath, it's plastic, solid, lasts a long time, has a drain hole in it. You know, very affordable. You can do 99% of your bushcrafting with this knife.
Yeah, and that's the thing. Like, we keep saying you don't need these massive knives. And that is the most common problem or misconception, I guess, for people going out and buying their knives. The two big things they do is they generally buy a knife that's too big for what they actually want it to do. And two, they get somebody else to tell them what they need. This is my biggest gripe with buying a knife is I get it all the time. Well, what knife do you recommend? The knife that works for you. Because the knife that works for you may not necessarily work for me. And the knife that works for me probably isn't going to work for you. I got a different hand. I got a different style of moving the knife. I have my own way of doing things. And it really is, you just look at all these aspects and figure out how you're going to use it. And then try a few. What you twirling around there, Ben?
I think I found this one on a Canadian Tire. It's a Gerber knife. I'm just playing with it. It's not super comfortable. The handle is skeletonized. It doesn't feel uncomfortable. Like, I think I could use it. But it does fit in hand nice. Like, as much as I don't like it, I do. I think it's on sale right now for, like, $9.99. So, like, you can get something like this. Gerber, solid steel, good knife, lightweight. You know, like, you can see it. It rotates in your hand nice. Like, you can really do something with this, no problem. I mean, you don't have to spend a fortune on knives, guys. But you do have to get comfortable with it. And that's the thing. And I think you were getting to it. You got to practice.
And that's the thing. The more you practice, the more you try, the more you're going to learn what you like for a knife. And honestly, the one takeaway from everything we're going to talk about tonight is try. Don't be scared to ask somebody if you can use their knife. Some will say no. They're very personal about their knives. But a lot of bushcrafters will be like, oh yeah, sure, try this out. Because they know what it's like to be on the hunt for the perfect knife. A lot of us still are, in all honesty. You know what I mean?
Oh yeah. Well, I mean, me and you, we get together, we'll quickly share each other's knives. Like, we'll show each other because we like to compare them and use them and see what works. But I agree with you. Like, I won't give my knife to anyone. There's a lot of people who've asked me for my knife, and I would laugh at them because there's no way I'm leaving and letting them take that because they're going to do something stupid with my knife. A, they're going to cut themselves. Or B, they're going to cut something that's not meant to be cut. Now I got to fix my blade. And so I don't like that. And if you're the type of person that's going to put my knife down where it doesn't belong, then I'm probably going to take it away from you quite quickly because it doesn't take much for them to get lost, damaged, destroyed. How often do you say you cut something with your knife?
Define cut something.
Like, if you're out for a walk and you see a stick, what's the chances you're picking it up and whittling with it?
If I'm just out for a walk, not a lot. If I know I'm going out into the woods to do some camping, whittling's a part of it for me. Yeah. I enjoy sitting down and whittling. But, much like yourself, I generally carry more than one knife. The knife that I sit down and whittle with is not necessarily the knife I carry on my hip.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I have some proper carving knives. I have a few proper carving knives. You've seen my carving knives. I've seen your carving knives. And if I'm going to do some serious whittling, those are coming out. But if I'm left to my own devices and I find a piece of wood, I'm putting a sharp point on it, or I'm going to see how flush I can cut it. That's a hard one.
Yes.
Just cutting a round stick and wanting, like, it's easy to cut it in half. Anyone can cut a piece of wood in half. Cut it so that it's a nice flat 90, like if you had a saw. And it takes a lot of cuts, and it's some pretty precise movements. When you get good at that, that's really going to help you with other cuts as you go on. Because
so
you need that.
Before we get into the skills of how to develop there, because that is kind of what this episode's about, we're about halfway. The last thing I want to touch on blades, if we can, is the thickness and what that means to it. We have mentioned it. There is a couple things that I look for in blade thickness. If it's going to be a workhorse, if I'm going to be doing a lot of prying and stuff like that, and I'm not saying that you should be using your knife as a pry bar. Don't get me wrong. But my fire department knife, I have used this to pry things open in the line of duty. You know what I mean? It takes a lot of abuse. This is a very cost-effective knife, but very built tough knife. Very thick spine on it for a folder. And it'll take a fair bit of abuse. It's also a softer metal, so there's a better chance of it bending before snapping. Which a lot of people would be like, well, why would you want your knife bent? you know what? A bent knife can still cut, a snap knife not so well. And if you, you know, kind of extreme, but potentially that could matter in the line of saving somebody's life. I can still cut a seatbelt with a bent blade. But if I don't have a blade at all, I can't cut that seatbelt. You know what I mean? So that was one of the aspects for a knife for me in my everyday life. Now, if I wasn't going to do that kind of stuff with it, I'd probably get a more hard blade.
I was going to say a shattered knife is a dangerous knife, too, because you don't know where those pieces are going to go.
And
so I would like you would rather see it bend than shatter.
Yeah, and I like that a lot more. And a thinner knife, for those that are wondering, and I mean a lot of people are going to say, well, this is a no-brainer, but thinner knives have a lot more flex to them, and they'll return to their shape a lot better. That's why a lot of fillet knives that you get for fishing and stuff like that, you can almost, like, put a super hefty bend on those, and they'll spring right back up to where they are. Yeah, exactly. These Open L knives that were gifted to us, they are a thinner blade, and they actually have a fair amount of flex to them. You know what I mean? For a knife this size, that is a lot of flex. Versus, say, this BSP Knives one that Steve gave me. Like, there is practically no flex to that because it's so thick. You know what I mean? And I would dare say that if I put any pressure to it, it's either going to shatter or bend. But once again, I don't generally use a knife as a pry bar. It just happens to be my fire department knife. It might end up like that. I've used it to pry a door away from a car so you could get, like, a tool in to pop the door and things like that. Like, you know what I mean? Yeah. It doesn't get the use that a normal knife would get. It is an abused knife. I admit that, but it goes into a career where you abuse tools, unfortunately. You know what I mean? They don't.
Yeah. My Open L knife will never pry a door open.
No. Not gonna do it. And the thing is, we're talking like a $20 knife here. If I break this thing, I drill it into the garbage bin and I go get a new one. You know what I mean? It means nothing sentimentally to me.
This Gerber knife, you know, the blade is actually, the actual cutting edge is actually shorter than my Open L. And it's every bit of two, if not three times as thick. I would be better off prying with this one.
Yes, by far. The Open L would not be a prying knife. I imagine, like you said, it would probably fail pretty quick.
But I can slice a carrot with this one. Where this
you can chop a carrot with that one.
But by the time you're halfway through, this one is wedged enough, the carrot will break, right?
And that might be the last aspect of blades that people can start looking at, though this is a topic on its own, and I will leave it for another night and to potentially somebody that knows a little bit more about it. The kind of grind that is on your, or edge, whatever you want to call it, that's on your knife, changes the way that knife functions. So if you get like a double concave edge or something like that, it's a lot more wedge shape. It's going to push things apart. It's better for splitting. And stuff like that. If you want to use it to split up, you know, some feathers, maybe not feather sticks, but if you're splitting small kindling, if you're going to use it for batoning, and it's a tougher edge. Now you can get like, what's it called? Not a Scandi grind. It's straight grind. Is that what it's called? Straight grind?
Scandi. So that's what your Open L has. That's kind of what these are kind of have it. It's a single bevel. Pretty straight back. You could look it up. We could, just to be sure, but because the terms are not always exactly what me and you would use.
And that's why I said it's pretty much a topic for another night with somebody that knows more about it than me. I know it's a thing, and that's about all I know. But what I do know is the longer that grind is. So if it starts all the way at the top, it comes down to a straight point. You can make a finer point with a finer edge. You can get it a lot sharper, but it's a lot weaker edge. It's going to damage and chip easier. And if it's more of a blunt edge, you may not get it as razor sharp, but it's going to hold that edge a lot longer. So you got to balance that with what you're doing too. But once again, that's probably not the most important aspect for finding your first couple knives. Really find something that sits in your hand well and that you like... the way the blade handles in your hand. And that could be from length and shape and design, because there's drop points, there's round points, there's double spear points. I mean, there's different things in there. Find what works for you. That's another topic, too, that we can talk about with edges. But that's kind of what I wanted to let people know what to look at when getting a knife. And we've already mentioned some exercises or things you can do to practice using a knife so you know how it's going to act. And that one is, you said, bed, trying to cut a flat or 90 degree cut on a piece of wood. That's a great way because you can, it's not just one cut. You don't just baton it through, I guess is what I'm trying to say. Actually carve it through.
Yeah. I mean, yeah. So you have a few ways you can cut, and there's many methods, and there's many ways of holding your arms and stuff. I sent you a little link. You could possibly throw it up. It's A.G. Russell Knives. And they show a Scandi grind, and that's what you would find on your Mora knife. And what's found on your Opinel would be much considered a full flat grind. And a saber grind is about halfway between. So very flat grinding. It's just whether it's fairly close to the tip or all the way back or about halfway up the knife. And then you have concave and convex, or hollow would be, I think,
That's the one I was trying to find.
Concave, convex is kind of the more the apple seed grind, right? And all these are very important. They do different things. A hollow grind is got a weaker edge, but much sharper, right? So you start with a thick spine and you rapidly go down and come to a very fine point. That's actually exam, you can see that on probably this knife here. This one here, if you could look at it, actually comes in and then sort of straightens out and goes down to a very fine edge. So we got a decent back, a very fine edge. You can do some really detailed work with this knife. Depends on what you're cutting. You're cutting hardwood, you probably want to go with something a bit stronger. So then you're going with your convex or your Scandi grind. If you're cutting softwood, you definitely would want like a full grind or a convex.
I threw that website up. I don't think you can see it on your side, Ben, but I do have the grind sitting up there. So
definitely look, check that out if you guys are interested.
I'll include that link in the description too for anybody that wants it, seeing we mentioned it on here. There, just added it in. Yeah, so now that we've talked about some of the design features, a thing that we've always said that you can do, and you can look up lots of YouTube videos on how to do this, it's called tri-sticks. And I mean, we've mentioned it 100 times, it teaches you how to do a bunch of different notches and things like that, but the key concept is use fine motor skills with your knife. Let's see, Dave... Cutting tools can have a variety of edges, but chopping tools like machetes and axes all have a convex grind, in my opinion. And that's the thing, Dave. Those are more of a wedge shaped with, a flare out, so they're meant for chopping. So, exactly, like you said, that I prefer a convex grind on that, too. I know there's other people that would argue. And I encourage other people to make their own opinions, but good place to start.
Do you see the odd axe with a concave grind? You do see it. It's more rare. And if it's used for a more specific purpose, and if you use it for just cutting down a tree randomly, you're going to damage it.
They get stuck a lot more. They get stuck a lot more because the wedging material, it works for going in and driving it apart, but it also helps to bounce the blade back out, especially with axes. Yeah. So
and Fishkers used to make one that had a flat, almost a flat grind or a Scandi grind. And it was just a flat piece of steel right in a fiberglass handle. And it served a purpose. I think you have an example of one somewhere, actually.
I might. Hold on. Keep the people entertained.
Trail one. It'll come to me later. So there's, there is examples of it. But yeah, for the most part, that is a pretty good rule of thumb. You get into your much heavier, I'm trying to think, some of your heavy Gerber and Schrade knives, they have a much more convex.
Had to go looking for this one. But yeah, it's more of a...
Yeah. Almost flat or scandy grind.
Yep. So it digs into wood great. Great for cutting kindling. Sucks for splitting wood.
Yeah. Yeah. It has its limitations for sure, right? And it was the other Trailblazer used to make a knife.
Yes. I think I have an example of that as well.
That one is extremely
flat. Oh, it's real bad.
Just give me one second. I think I got that too.
So, usable, but, you know, understand the purpose of it. You can almost use that more as a knife than an axe. But what a beautiful handle it has, because it has a very wedge-shaped handle and a bit of a curve. And I think it would actually be really... I was saying, it's got a wedge-shaped handle, like it really fits in your hand well, and it kind of got a nice curve to it. And actually, it's more useful as a knife.
Yeah. You can actually do feather sticks. It's Melissa's little hatchet is what I was looking for, and you can do feather sticks with that thing wicked well.
I have one, too. It is generally used for the girls. And not that it's a girl's knife or a men's knife. It's just one that I tend to give them because it's pink. And it's super comfortable in the hand. But yeah, you would struggle to cut down a tree with it.
Yeah. And that's the thing. It's...
But you can go through alder beds, like, nutting with that axe. Like, chop, chop, and it's down, right? So, depends on what you're cutting. Know your environment. Know your capability.
So,
but I would gladly take that as an item to skin a moose.
Oh, easy. Or... Yeah, skinning blazing trails, where you're just kind of sliding a little sliver off a tree to blaze a trail. We used to do something in natural resources called line crewing, and that's exactly what you did. You went in and you marked crown lines, and it was just blazing the trail. And we used double bit axes. One side had more of a chopping grind to it. One had more of a slicing grind to it. I'm not even going to try to use the names. Like I said, I'll mess that up for sure. But anyway... One side we use for chopping stuff out of the way, and the other side we use for marking trees. Because you could very accurately take a sliver out without damaging the tree, because you didn't want to get into the meat of the tree, you just wanted to remove the bark, basically. So it would actually kind of grow in a specific pattern to blaze the line out.
Yeah. So we were talking about the tri-stick, and that does, I can't even remember the number of different types of cuts, but you have like, the wedge cut, you have like a more of a 7 cut, you have different notches, you cut like a full half of the round out so that you have something that you could, you know, butt material up to. And with all those cuts, you can make various traps, various tools, cooking utensils, like ways of hanging your goods and stuff up. There's a lot you can do, and it really gets you down to the patterns. Once you get done, I mean, I've tried doing carvings. I've carved like faces and stuff. I've tried to carve people. It's really interesting what you can do. And there's cuts you would use when you want to hog a lot of material off. And that's where you actually will hold the blade sort of to your hand. And you actually take your chicken wing arms out, but your knife doesn't move. You pull the wood through it. And it's very controlled, very small, with a lot of leverage. You can hug large amounts of material off of relatively little effort. And then when you want to do more fine work, it's really in there. And you can, you know, you're just scraping the tiniest amount of material off. You might take 5 or 6 cuts, what you could do much bigger, but you're going to get that detail.
Yeah, and that's the thing. When you're trying to work with a knife and learn how it really responds to your use, it's way better to do a lot of fine detail and intricate work because you're going to use a lot more dexterity to get all those little cuts and stuff and really move that knife around and learn how it rolls in your hand. I see some people, they'll grab the biggest knife they can and they're like, look at what my knife can do. And they start slicing off these massive chunks of wood. And there's two problems with that. One is that's dictated more on the immediate edge on the knife and the strength of the person. And two, the way they go about it usually just makes my skin crawl. Because keep in mind, the longer your knife blade is and the more force you exert on it, you're basically making a lever. So if something goes wrong, say this is the knife, which is a long knife, comparatively to what I would use. And this is your stick, which is my actual belt knife, which is, you know, this is my go-to knife. It's a very thin blade. It's a little longer than what Ben would like, but this is my fine dexterity knife. It's very lightweight. I love this one. But anyway, going back from that, if you have this as your knife and your stick and you are launching this super hard off it, every time you're putting pressure into that, you're making two opposite forces that's basically creating a spring. If something goes wrong and you slip off that, there's a real slim chance that you're going to stop that in a short amount of time because you're putting so much pressure on it. That's going to carry through. And the more pressure you put on it, the further it's going to carry through, which means the higher the risk of personal or other injury. So if you need to slice something like that, you're far better off to take your knife and hold it close to you and pull the wood back through it. Because yes, you might bump somebody with the wood or bump yourself, but I'm probably not going to cut yourself with the wood. So anyway, that's my little rant on that. I hate when people grab a knife and they just start whacking, you know, like slicing off these massive chunks of wood with all this effort and it's literally snapping off the end and you can tell they have zero control with a knife. It's not about how much you can cut. It's about controlling your blade.
And you want a good test. How long and thin of a slice can you get? You can get a nice, long, thin slice. That tells a lot more about your knife control and the sharpness of your blade. And like you say, hogging off big chunks. And like, because when you get a big cut, it's more of a twist of the blade. You can snap a big part off. But you go back and look, you didn't cut it. You ripped it. And you can see it's not a smooth cut. You can see where the fibers let go. And so that's, you know, it's an efficient thing sometimes, but doesn't prove much when it comes down to your knife control.
Funny enough, one of my favorite tests for a new knife is feather sticking. I grab a 12 to 14 inch stick of wood and I see if I can feather stick that roughly the entire length. I mean, I have to allow a little room for me to hold it and a little room for it at the end so it doesn't fall off. But can I feather stick that successfully repeatedly? And if I can, that usually tells me that knife's pretty good. I mean, one, it's probably got a decent straight sharpen on it, because you can get knives, especially if you buy them secondhand, the people that own them prior to you didn't really understand sharpening, or they were a little heavy-handed on one side, your knife will run. And what that means is one side is sharpened a little more than the other, so it turns to one direction. So instead of having a perfect V, you might have one angled in or the other, and it'll have a tendency to kind of hoop or curve. And this is very common for new people starting off. And it creates a lot of frustration for new people starting off. So trying to do these delicate workings and things like that, not realizing that the grind or sharpness on their knife is off on one side. And regardless of what they do, it's always going to cause them a problem. It's always going to hoop in one direction. So that's something to keep an eye on too.
Yeah.
But yeah, feather sticking, great exercise to practice some knife skills. Tri-stick, great exercise to practice some knife skills. Whittling, fine whittling. Try to whittle. Ugh, I'm definitely going to stumble over that word a few more times. Try to whittle out like faces. That's one of your hobbies. That does a lot of fine detail work, especially if you're using a straight blade, not using some sort of carving knife. It's tricky to get some of that stuff in there, you know what I mean? You're taking nice, small, little controlled cuts on everything, like basically like you're shaving a pencil. And that will tell you a lot more about a knife than if you were just, you know, slapping these things through large sticks of wood.
Yeah. You see a lot of people testing a knife and they'll take a piece of paper and say, oh, look how sharp it is. That's an interesting thing. And yes, it is sharp if it can do that well. But then my question is, go cut a piece of wood and see if you can still do that. So if you can't, that edge, as sharp as it is basically useless, because anything you put it to is going to damage that edge and you're going to lose it right away. So you do need to find that healthy balance of sharp yet durable. And that's where you get that double edge, where you have your main edge, but then you taper it in a little bit more at the cutting, because those supports on the side is what prevents that tip from curling, toppling. Once it topples or curves because it's too thin, then it fails, and then you'll feel it. Like when you go to cut, you'll feel the spots where it's not as sharp anymore. It's because the blade is curved. And in fact, you're just pushing blunt metal into wood. And a good test for that is just take the edge of your knife and just go on your nail and see if it digs in. So I get nice dig, nice dig, nice dig. I got a slightly slippery spot. Okay, so I'm not perfectly sharp. And my tip doesn't dig nearly as well as my body. And I have that problem. I don't get that top curve as good as I get the flat. And I never can. That's an area I struggle with. Some guys are better at it than me. They get the same sharpness all throughout. I'll admit they're better at me. But
sharpening a knife is a skill on its own. And yeah. It's not a skill you master overnight, or most people don't master overnight. I have met one person in my life that literally never sharpened a knife and took to it like, I have no idea. Literally within 30 minutes, he was sharpening knives sharper than people I've known that have done it for 30 plus years. But natural talent aside, most times it takes a long time to catch on to sharpening a knife properly. So that, once again, we've talked about in a previous episode, so we won't harrick on a lot here. But don't give up 1, 2, 3, or 100 times in. You could be sharpening hundreds upon hundreds of times until you get to where you're good, quote unquote. You know what I mean? You may be thousands of times before you get, quote unquote, really good. Or you could be like me and you suck no matter how much you do it. I mean, I can put an edge on something, but there's people that are just naturally better at it than me, for sure.
Yeah, no, for sure. You know, it is a practice thing. So is carving, so is cutting. Do keep an eye on it. The more dull it gets, the more it needs to be sharpened. It's easier to maintain an edge than to put it back on. So if it starts to dull, sharpen it as soon as reasonably possible. If you talk to a lot of hunters when they're skinning an animal, as soon as they notice it's dull, they'll quickly take a steel or a ceramic and they'll put a quick edge back on it and they'll keep going. But if they keep pushing through, it's going to get worse and worse, and now they have to get a full grinding set out and rebuild that edge again. So,
you know. So for, you know, just a quick story on that myself, last fall, the deer I harvested, I had 6 knives. Instead of sharpening it, as I got dull, I just changed knives, and it took... Actually, I think I had to go back through and sharpen them all at least once. So literally 12 knives for me to be happy dressing that deer, because I wanted the same consistency and sharpness. And that's a thing worth mentioning, too. A dull knife is inherently more dangerous than a sharp knife. Sharp knife is predictable. You know how it's going to work. You can keep the consistency. A dull knife, you start putting a lot more effort into it than you need to get the same effect. And we talked about that, you know, that build up of pressure and then the release, you have a springing action. It's a recipe for disaster.
And the harder you have to work, the more tired you are, the more hot spots you're going to be, and the more uncomfortable you'll be. And then you get frustrated and you make mistakes. So maintaining that and really understanding your knife. I said, we have personal relationships with our knives. We really understand our knives. We know how they work. It's because we use them a lot. They fit in our hands very naturally because we use them a lot and we know how they are. It's no big deal to open them. We know how to close them one-handed. We don't have to look at it. And this is because we are so used to these knives. I haven't held this knife in about a year. It's still something that it comes very naturally to me. If I picked up a piece of wood, I know how this knife is going to cut and how it's going to operate. I really have a feel for it.
So, for instance, where Ben said he doesn't care for a longer blade, which this one is, the reason I like this blade is because it fits my hand. When I go to do delicate work, I can actually come up onto the knife like this and use it as another handle. And literally, it gets nowhere near me where it's going to cut me, but I can use that fine tip. And that was one of the things that really made me gravitate towards this knife. It's just all around good for the way I function, I guess.
Yeah. So... you know, really get used to your knife, how to handle, how to use it, practice with it. I have carved numerous hiking stick, you know, find a nice stick. It's a common thing for me to find one that's 1 to 3 inches across and cut it down. I'll take all the bark off it. I'll whittle shapes in it. I'll whittle little things. And when I'm done, oftentimes I'll toss it because it just spent the time to really learn it. Generally, I think about 1.25 to 1.5 inches is ideal. And alders and aspen are my go-tos because they're usually pretty straight and pretty consistent. So your top and bottom don't have a big difference. You can cut a beautiful stick out of that. And they're fun to bark. So you can actually cut shapes in them, diamonds, squares, hearts, you name it. You carve it out. You can pull all that stuff off. You can write your name on it. That's a really good practice cutting letters and numbers. And shaping things like that. Those are little details. You can learn to carve the inside of it to make the relief really look cool. But those skills carry on to many other things. So it really is down to practice and trying things. And the tri-stick is a good point, like you said. But any use of your knife, making tools, like look up tools that you can make in the woods. Tent pegs, I carve 100 of those probably.
Oh, man. I can't remember how many of those I got. Well, I don't carry tent pegs. So every time I go out, I have to make tent pegs. I guess because Dave brought it up here, just because we are coming up to the end of our hour, surprisingly. Man, that went by fast. But anyway, I guess something else to be aware of with blades is the steel. And this is getting a little more to the advanced side of it. So if you want to up your game again, steel quality, consistency, and type is going to dictate a lot of how that blade holds an edge as well. So for instance, he said, cold steel uses a 1055 steel. That stuff is almost impossible to get an edge on because it's like feels like glass. Super hard. Super hard to get an edge on, but once it's on there, it stays pretty good. But the problem is it's very brittle as well. So it's prone to chipping if used improperly. On like 1075 and 1095, never seems as hard to sharpen because it's a softer steel. A little bit more flex to it, a little easier to sharpen, a little easier to dull. But you can usually hone that out pretty well with a piece of leather or a ceramic rod, like Ben said. As with the 1055, you are probably going to have to take that back down to some sort of diamond stone to actually put a workable edge on that.
Yeah, 100%. Most knives, you'll find some around them a marking. This one here says 311 right on the hand, on the blade. I was just looking at a few of these. If not, look up the brand. And you can oftentimes get some information on what they use. And it'll tell you a bit about the type of blade it is and what, you know. Sometimes they'll just say stainless steel, Switzerland, things like that. You'll get a feel for it. This is something we could have an entire episode on steel hardness, softness, different capabilities. Should you have one that's made of Damascus, Sami, so you know, two soft steels over a hard steel, you know, these are all considerations that you could get into. I don't think we want to ever get into that, really, me and you, but find out what works for you. The general guideline that you said about harder steels, harder to put an edge on, holds it longer. Softer steels, easy to put an edge on, won't last as long. The shape really dictates a lot of stuff. If it has a thin blade, you aren't going to be able to put huge forces on this thing. If you have a thick blade, you're going to have more trouble doing fine detailed work. Can you do either or with either? Yes. But the thin blade is much more likely to break or bend and never cut a straight again. And the thick blade is more likely to wedge things out and bind, but you can wail on it. So you, like you said, you can baton your wood. You can, you know, really work with it. So find those happy mediums.
And I think that's probably, I mean, that's most of what I wanted to say for tonight for sure. So I know people can probably hear my computer making some noises back here. For some reason, it's picking Chrome up as potentially trying to hack my computer, and I'm not sure why, so that's probably as good a place as any for me to shut her down for tonight there, Ben.
Yes.
So thanks for everybody that had joined us here tonight. We had Dave, Real Big Monkey. Sorry, Dave, man. I don't know why I can't talk tonight. But anyway, we have Real Big Monkey 1. Another great bushcrafter has a YouTube channel. I suggest anybody that's still listening, jump over to his channel, check it out. We had Danny Red Sand Adventures, same thing. Jump on his channel, check it out. He's from PEI. We had Steve, Troy, and Chris joining us. So thanks again, folks. Always like to give a shout out. And I know we didn't pull from the comments as much this episode, simply because we had a lot of stuff we wanted to cover on our own. And we blew through our hour already. I was watching the comments. I tried to at least make mention of some of the stuff that happened there. But yeah, once again, thanks for everybody that joined us. Same as always, you can get out there again now, for those of you in Nova Scotia. You just can't have any fire. So get out there, play safe, have fun.
Ditto. Yeah. Send us a picture. Night, all.
Night, guys and ladies.